This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
All right, and welcome back to your weekly edition of Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, John Bonham, and as always, Mark Jackson. Mark, how are we doing?
We're doing good, man. We were just talking before we went live how it just feels like this entire month of December is one event after the other, which is in direct contrast to what I just had the last month. So really not a whole bunch of time to breathe. This is the only time I'm really feel like I'm breathing doing this podcast right now. So take that for what it is.
Well, try to enjoy your in time on the podcast then, man.
Exactly.
Well, you watch anything interesting this past week? Doesn't have to be a new release, just any fun old movies or anything like that?
Yeah, it's definitely not an old movie. It's rather new. It came out a couple months ago, but I saw reportedly Robert Redford's last ever movie that he's going to be starring in, The Old Man and the Gun. Pretty cool, pretty fun watch. I'll be working on a post for that, hopefully to come out in sometime in the next 24 or 48 hours. But yeah, I got to that this weekend. Recommended. Not amazing, but definitely recommended for sure.
Had a pretty strong cast, didn't it?
It did, yeah. It had Danny Glover in it, obviously Robert Redford, Sissy Spacek, Casey Affleck. So yeah, there are some names with some clout that have done some things in Hollywood for sure.
Cool. All right, so we can expect that post on That Moment In.
Absolutely. This week. Yep, absolutely.
Awesome. Have you ever seen the Cape Fear remake?
I have not, no.
Okay. It had been like years since I had seen it. So I rewatched that earlier this week. And it's Scorsese directed, starring like Nick Nolte, Juliette Lewis, and Jessica Lange as a family that Robert De Niro is kind of like tormenting and trying to get revenge against.
Yeah.
But I mean, overall, it's an okay movie, but De Niro is just so far out there in it. It makes it worthwhile to watch. I think he actually got an Oscar nomination out of it.
Okay.
And funny tidbit, it was originally supposed to be directed by Spielberg, and Scorsese was set to direct Schindler's List.
Right.
And they opted to trade pictures. And I think it goes without saying that Scorsese probably got the short end of the stick based on, which movie was more successful and, I guess, even historical, if you will. But that was a few fun facts about my watch for the week there.
Cool. All right.
And without further ado, we'll dive into the real news this week.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone.
And Mark, you had all the news, man. I'll let you run with it.
All right. So the one thing that I came away from, and we can kind of maybe see into Creed 2 talk here, but Sylvester Stallone is apparently, dead set on retiring his Rocky Balboa character after Creed 2. John, you just came out of this, so, you are even more fresher on this than I have. What's kind of your initial takeaway with him wanting to move forward and essentially lay the book on Balboa?
So are we getting into – is it early – or is it like too soon to do spoilers for Creed 2?
Now my gut usually says yes, but at the same time also with boxing movies, I feel like a lot of them follow the same script. I think it's okay if maybe we delve into spoilers a little bit. Let's do it.
Sure. Okay, and we won't go too far, but I guess I will say that it finally left Rocky with – I think a little bit of closure, like from a family standpoint. It's obviously always been, I guess, at least ever since Creed was released, we knew that, he had lost Adrian. He was very disconnected from his son. And we finally get a little bit of, happy closure around all that subject. And as much as I enjoy the Rocky movies and seeing him come back for Creed and he got the Oscar nomination, I think this is a really good stopping point. Like, let's not get to a point where we don't want to see him on screen anymore.
Yeah.
He's just too old and ridiculous looking.
Right. I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I think I think if Creed 2 were to kind of end everything here, I would personally be very, very okay with that. I don't think the movie is as good as 1, but I do think it ties in a lot of different elements that you could consider that were left, you know, open, that have kind of finally been closed, or at least put like a nice bow on. So I'm cool with how they kind of left Rocky. You know, like you said, closure with his son and his grandson. I like that aspect of it. And I'm with you. You know, even if I know they're going to do another Creed 3. I'm curious to know what exactly they could pull from. I'm sure they have some ideas, but after, you know, getting this plot line in, and, you know, the Creed, Drago, their sons going to war, and ultimately having that reconciliation, even with kind of Drago's character getting fleshed out. I'm cool if they never do another Creed, but I mean, it's made some really good money, so it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought the sequel was really, really good. Very entertaining movie. Maybe one of my best of the year when I sit down and think about things. But yeah, I mean, it's at such a good stopping point right now.
Right.
And I mean, I don't think anybody would disagree with the fact that the Rocky movies went on for too long, right?
Yeah.
They jumped the shark and just kept churning them out because, you know, they're making money. So why not set up a franchise before it gets to that point?
Right, right. And, you know, I imagine, you know, if this is true that, you know, Stallone's never going to be on the screen again as Rocky Balboa, I'm sure he'll probably still have some creative control, you know, maybe serve as the producer and whatnot, maybe do a little bit of writing. I just kind of struggle to see, you know, how they can kind of top this, you know, two movie recency that they've done in the franchise. I mean, yeah, maybe there's something I'm forgetting. I'm not a screenwriter or anything, but, you know, it feels really, really hard, really difficult when I stretch my mind to figure out, you know, what more can be done that they haven't already touched on.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, to your point, you know, if the movies are making strong money, there would be another one. I wish they'd stop. I guess just a few thoughts on Creed 2. I thought it was, whereas the first movie didn't have as much of a Rocky feeling to it, Creed 2 definitely does. Like, it follows the Rocky formula of, you know, gets beat in a fight. He gets, you know, kind of like he's having all these issues and he's struggling with his, you know, identity as a boxer and what he needs to do. And he's like come to terms with who he is. And which is just straight out of, you know, some of the previous Rocky installments. And you get like the full blown, you know, like comeback training sequence, while it can be a little cheesy, I still, you know, enjoy it. And I think it's fun, but, where I thought, you know, the original Creed almost, you know, stood on its own legs.
Sure.
You know, it had the tie-ins, but it felt like its own. Whereas Creed 2 almost felt like a continuation of the Rocky series to me.
No, I think you make perfect sense of that. I mean, Creed, you know, I always say with boxing movies, at the core of them, they all really are the same. You've got either a guy from obscurity rises, you know, to become someone, or, you know, he starts off the movie as someone, but he's got to get humbled again and then rediscover why he's doing this. That's kind of like the plot of Creed 2, the fall, the rise, fall, and then come back to rise. So you kind of have those elements of like 2, but then maybe even a little bit of 3, but obviously a lot of 4. I'm with you on how they do that, how they tell the story. It definitely does feel a little bit more Rocky than maybe Creed, but it still was, I think, told pretty well. The direction, I thought, by Stephen, you know, Capel Jr. was pretty solid for, you know, a 30 something year old. Now I wouldn't say there's the same fluidity that Ryan Coogler had in a lot of his boxing scenes. And I thought the movie overall in the first Creed flowed a lot more better. There are times here where maybe, I don't want to say things completely slowed to a halt. And some of the boxing, while good, in my piece that I have on my site, I kind of felt like it was a little more, if you ever played the video games like Fight Night, like Champion, Round 4, it kind of has that feel a little more, which is okay. You know, I still found some of the boxing scenes pretty visceral, but I just didn't maybe find them as compelling or as fluid as Ryan Coogler's hand-to-hand. Obviously, that one-shot fight, Creed versus Sparino, but even just the finale, Creed versus Conlan, you know, I thought that was one of the best scenes of the decade as far as just like pure action excitement goes. And you still have that here. I just think, you know, obviously when you're comparing Kugler to what, you know, Capel does here, it's a little bit of a drop off, but it's not like, it's not terrible. It still is pretty watchable and it still is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, in Creed 2, the boxing sequences, they're just, you know, like slugfests, and it's just guys throwing, you know, gigantic hooks on each other the entire time. Which is fine. And like, you know, the entire audience was like cringing. And
yeah,
when Creed is just getting his ribs cracked, you know, you could hear everybody just, you know, churning in their seats.
Right.
But man, you know what, on that note about, you know, the audience getting into it, you know, people were clapping at the end of the movie and cheering and, just a fun experience, which, is always what you want to look for when you, you know, go to see a movie.
Yeah. And that's kind of what it comes down to. You know, if this movie's brought people in like that, you know, I actually went to rewatch it really recently, with a smaller crowd. I'd say it was maybe only 10% full. It was an early morning showing, so that made sense. But even, you know, 10 people, 15 people in there, a lot of them were still into it. I'm naturally more of a reserve guy. You know, when I'm watching movies, I maybe don't, you know, get super audible, but I still find it, you know, compelling that a movie can do that a lot of times, even when the plot beats are pretty similar.
Yeah, yeah, it's impressive and just, you know, speaks to, I think, the character development, mm-hmm. and the plot development that they make.
Yeah.
I'll stop delving too far into this one, but I just want to touch on one other point that you made last week is, you know, you get some pretty, for the first time in, you know, a Creed or a Rocky movie, you get some pretty good insight into the antagonist of who he's fighting. And you can actually kind of appreciate this, what this guy's gone through, and not to say that you root for him, because mm-hmm. they still do. You know, he's throwing cheap shots and he's the clear antagonist, but, you know, it was a rough life, and yeah. You know, you kind of feel for the guy.
Yeah. I think the point I made last week was how, you know, a lot of times, even with people who've never seen Rocky IV, like, you know, the name Ivan Drago, because he's in a way almost become a meme or a meme, whatever you want to say that word, but, he's kind of been that way. You know, everyone knows him from the "if he dies, he dies." And that's, in some ways, yeah. That's all people know Ivan Drago for. But here, like you mentioned, they do kind of go into his backstory a little more. And you kind of get the feel of, you know, maybe a little bit of the things he's had to overcome and the burden that he's passed on to his son, which is kind of tragic. And, you know, there's a really good dinner scene about halfway through in the movie where, you know, you kind of see all these prior elements come back from Rocky IV, and you see them come to light, and why Ivan does what he does, but you also see, you know, what makes his son tick too. So I thought that was a great yeah. scene, really good development, and I thought the end was pretty touching too. I've even seen counters though to like people saying maybe they should have done it another way, but I was very surprised at how much emotion they're kind of able to draw out of those two antagonists.
Yeah, they finally gave that side of the story some depth, which was, you know, not something that we've seen before. And yeah, I mean, in Rocky IV, look, even Ivan Drago is just pure evil, mm-hmm. and he's actually humanized a little bit in Creed
II. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Alrighty, well, we can stop things there for the Creed 2 recap, but appreciate it. I just saw it, wanted to talk about it, so glad we got some of those thoughts out there. What do we have next on the news, Mark?
Just one more piece here. I just found this out today. Apparently, it made news a couple of days ago, but there's going to be a trilogy chapter in the Has Fallen franchise called Angels Fallen. This is the whole, you know, Olympus Has Fallen, London Has Fallen, you know, movies where, what's his name? Mike Banner. Mike Bannon, that's it. Mike Banning, I'm finally going to get it right. But yeah, he's coming back for a trilogy capper. And, you know, if anyone's seen those movies, they're pretty cheesy. I wasn't in love with the first Olympus Has Fallen. I know some people love it for what it is. I still found it kind of boring and, you know, maybe not as like fun as I want it to be. The second one kind of fell in that same wheelhouse for me too. So I really don't distinguish the first and the second that much. To me, they're okay, they're bad movies with the occasional fun piece had in them. The CGI is awful, though, in these movies.
Oh, my gosh. It was so bad.
It's bad. But, yeah, they're doing a final one. The synopsis per Wikipedia is, after the events in the previous film, Secret Service agent Mike Banning finds himself framed for an assassination attempt on the president. Pursued by his own agency and the FBI, Banning races to clear his name and uncover the real terrorist threat, which has its sights on Air Force One.
Oh my God, this is like the Taken series, where like in the third movie he's framed for something and he's got Forrest Whitaker leading like the FBI against him.
Yeah, yep.
Oh gosh.
It's coming.
Just put it to an end.
So yeah, I mean, I don't recall how well the first one, you know, I think did pretty solid. It came out in the same, not the same exact time, but that same year where, you know, you had the whole people were bombing the White House. You had that movie, but then you had White House Down with Jamie Foxx Channing Tatum.
So ridiculous.
I think Olympus Has Fallen was the one that people gravitated to more. That's why I got to see a sequel. But yeah, I don't remember what the actual box office was on this one, but apparently it was okay enough. Must have did well enough in like home media watching and that type of stuff to get a sequel. And it did make double its budget, so I guess they feel like they've got enough to green light here and they're going to go with it, obviously.
Yeah, I think I read that despite how critically panned London Has Fallen is, mm-hmm. it actually outgrossed Olympus Has Fallen.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
So, and gosh, I can't believe Antoine Fuqua directed Olympus Has Fallen.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
He's like, after Training Day, like, good Lord.
Yeah, Training Day, Equalizer. I mean, the man's very talented. And, you know, there are people who like Olympus Has Fallen, and I'm not hating them for it. For me, I had an idea that, like, this is going to be really, really fun. And when I watched it, I was underwhelmed, you know, and I thought I was missing something. But then I watched London Has Fallen and not a whole bunch changed, despite the directors changing. So I don't think this franchise for me. I am a completionist, though, so I'm sure at some point I will check it out. But, yeah, the news did catch me off guard. But, you know, when it's making money, I imagine it's really easy for them to do another one. And, you know, Gerard Butler, for like him, love him or hate him, you know, he's very into these roles, if you will.
Yeah, he's definitely typecast himself, but – I mean, and I love Gerard Butler, and it's only because he did 300.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I still watch the, you know, crappy movies that he churns out. He had that, I guess the one that actually wasn't supposed to be that bad, that submarine movie.
Hunter, like a month or so ago. Hunter Killer or something? Yeah.
Oh, God, what a ridiculous title. But yeah, I guess that wasn't as bad, so I'll probably still watch it if it's on, like, Netflix or Prime or something, but it still looks terrible.
Yeah, so that's all I got with movie news this week. Yeah, those two pieces stood out to me.
Yeah, all righty. Well, in that case, we'll go ahead and shift gears and do the box office recap. But before we do, let's go ahead and take a quick break to hear about some friendly podcasts of ThatMomentIn.com.
We'll return after these announcements.
Hi there, Damian here from the Damian Riley Podcast. I hope you tune into my podcast. I love talking about movies and everything about them. You can subscribe at this website, thedamianrileypodcast.com. You can find me on iTunes or blueberry.com or really anywhere that good podcasts are served up.
Alright guys, so we need to record our top three reasons why you should listen to French Toast Sunday podcast.
Number three should definitely be our diverse opinions.
Number two should probably be our top three lists that we do every week.
No, it's gotta be Mark Wahlberg.
What about Gwyneth Paltrow's head?
It's gotta be Fighting the Sadness in the Swamp of Sadness.
Full Frontal.
Stories about being lost at sea.
Brendan Fraser being underground.
Helen Mirren's boobs.
Baltimore accents as heard in The Wire.
Wunderklaus.
Crepes. Character studies.
Wait, guys. What about movies?
Nah.
Tree rape.
Hmm.
Tree rape? Yeah, I like tree rape.
Tune in every Friday for a new episode of French Toast Sunday podcast brought to you by us at FrenchToastSunday.com.
Clothing made out of Burger King wrappers.
right, and we are back to cinema recap here. Not a very exciting weekend, Mark.
No,
from a movie perspective.
Not at all. Pretty much a repeat of what we saw for Thanksgiving, minus I think the three and the two spot flipping spots. But not really an exciting week. The only major release that we had was The Possession of Hannah Grace, and that came in at 7 with under 7 million. So that kind of tells you a lot about the state of the box office here.
Yeah, and I didn't even see reviews for that one. I'm going to guess they're not very good.
I don't think so. Yeah, I think if you do like a quick search on Google for Rotten Tomatoes, I think it's coming in at about 17%. And I said that, I had maybe interest in it if I wasn't preoccupied with things this weekend. I got preoccupied with things, and then, the news just kind of rolled out. And yeah, it doesn't seem good. The things I've kind of read, the small pieces I have read, is that it's not really a possession movie. It's just like someone dies and it takes place in a morgue. And I forget what exactly happens, the synopsis of it, but it doesn't sound good.
Yeah, no, it's 17% on Rotten Tomatoes, 5.5 on IMDb. So
yeah,
probably be skipping that one. And I think the box office numbers speak for themselves.
Yep.
But we'll go and do a quick recap of the top five here.
I'm putting the burden of lousy movies back on you. It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh. The jig is up.
We got Bohemian Rhapsody holding the 5 spot again with 8.1 million for 164 million total. Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald, again in the 4 spot after only 3 weeks out. So not looking good for this one. 11.2 million, 134 total on a $200 million budget. Did we figure out if it was released in China or not yet?
I don't think we did figure out. I mean, I'm sure it'll probably do some okay numbers over there. But we went into a fairly deep dive last week, and we were both surprised. Like, if it's looking like this for number two and for the number two in a reported, five movie, schedule for plans, or however you want to define that. This isn't good, because as we mentioned, the real hardcore fans of this, they're pretty divided on it, and it doesn't seem like they're left with a really good taste in their mouths as far as this moving forward. So no, this is not good. It's not promising.
Oh, one thing I did just notice is when I say what the total gross is every week, that's the total domestic.
Yeah.
So
yeah, the more you know, but
so it's actually made $519 million worldwide. Yeah. So they'll probably keep the series going.
Yeah. I mean, it's when you really think about it, what numbers do here in the U.S. is important, but there is still a bigger world too. So I'm sure they're going to be fine just for the number two, movie in a scheduled, five release movie schedule. I know I'm kind of butchering the delivery of that, but it's just, it's not promising. And, it seems like this kind of came and went. It's a big movie, but it just came and went. It doesn't seem like there's a whole bunch of buzz, lasting buzz after it.
Yeah, I mean, going into the year, you probably think this is going to be one of the biggest movies. A lot of people are going to go see it. It'll generate a lot of interest. And I don't think the trailers or the marketing ever did that. Yeah. The main publicity it got was bad publicity for I forget what exactly happened, but I think they like offended some race, or J.K. Rowling might have, just by not really understanding it with the snake character in it.
Yeah,
I know that's a terrible explanation, but I really just don't remember what the specifics of it were.
Right.
But yeah, point being, really the only publicity that I saw outside of a few ads here and there. But moving on, we got Creed dropped one spot to number 3, brought in another 16.8 in its second week, and it's up to 92.5 million worldwide. And that's on a $50 million budget. So doing well. Like you said, Even though this feels like a really good stopping point for the movie, probably not going to be the case.
Yeah, probably not. And I think even Michael B. has said, you know, I'd love to make more of these. So maybe they, you know, have more plans than you and I, you know, believe they do. And if that's the case and, you know, they can mine another good movie or two out of these, then I will still watch it. But if it were to end, I would be completely content with what they've done in two.
Yeah, I just think they're going to have a hard time finding a better antagonist to add to the movie.
That's
just
amazing.
There's,
yep,
you know, 30 years of history there. And that was a really strong driving force behind, you know, appeal to this one.
Yeah.
So I'd be really, really curious. Like, no one's going to want to, like, no one will care about, you know, if Mr. T's son.
Oh, yeah. That would just be corny, terrible. Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, and that was, I mean, the, you know, the son of the guy that killed his father, like, you're not going to find a better antagonist than that.
Nope, you sure aren't.
So, moving on, the Grinch actually rose one spot, which is usually something you don't see when it's in its fourth week. Back up to number two with 17.7 for a worldwide gross of $268 million. So, doing pretty darn well.
Yeah.
And last but not least, another animated film, Ralph Breaks the Internet, bringing another 25.7. Yeah, already up to 206.9 in its second week. So doing really well. I think that will continue to put up pretty strong numbers here through probably a better part of December.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I know we'll kind of go, you know, fairly in-depth, semi-in-depth into December, what kind of looks like. There aren't like a ton of heavy movies, but I could see, you know, Ralph Breaks the Internet doing pretty well and probably number one until maybe that Into the Spider-Verse movie comes out, because I've been hearing a lot of really strong things for that. So I feel like once that drops,
okay,
that's going to be number one in that week.
Yeah, I mean, so let's go ahead and dive into a little December preview on that note.
Coming soon to theaters.
So this upcoming weekend, December 7th, really nothing. The main, like, I guess, wider release movie is a Schindler's List re-release,
yep,
is what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
And otherwise, you know, you've got Natalie Portman's Vox Lux and then Mary Queen of Scots. That looks like a pretty good movie, but, those are both just going to be, you know, limited releases, probably to some indie theaters here and there.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's going to be Wreck-It Ralph again, without a doubt, right?
Yep. It's going to be Wreck-It Ralph again. That's for certain. Margot Robbie, I mean, yeah, she's obviously got a name, but that's not getting a huge, amount of theaters. Queen of Scots, if it's, it will probably expand, you know, once we maybe get deeper into award season. I haven't heard a whole bunch of buzz for this, but right now it is at 90% of Rotten Tomatoes. And again, Margot Robbie, seems like this is kind of tailor-made for a potential Best Actress nomination. So, you know, you'll have a little momentum that way. And you've got Ben is back, that's got getting a little bit of a limited release too. Lucas Hedges and Julia Roberts. That movie, I think it's also a little bit about addiction too. So we've had two addiction movies kind of within the past 6 weeks, that and Beautiful Boy. Almost hard to distinguish, but that's going to be releasing, not going to get a huge release. But yeah, long story short, so Wreck-It Ralph, I don't know how much it'll make next week. I imagine if it made, what, $25 million this weekend, I could see it doing something like maybe 18 or 19. I don't think it'll be a huge weekend for the box office next week.
Yeah, I don't think so at all. And the next week after that, on December 12th, that Wednesday, is going to be the Once Upon a Deadpool release, which we've touched on a little bit. It's going to be the PG-13 version of Deadpool 2. I think I saw they added 20 minutes of new footage to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have no interest in paying again to see a watered down version of the movie.
Yeah.
So that'll be a pass for me, but you know, it might draw some younger audience that wasn't able to see the R version the first time around.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll probably give this a cursory glance, but it's not something like I'm super excited for. I saw the preview for it when I went to rewatch Creed 2, which is the first thing I've kind of seen, whether it's on TV or otherwise marketing wise, but yeah, I'm not like super invested or have a ton of interest. I will watch it though. But yeah, I'm just, it is what it is.
Yep. And then 2 days later on December 14th, that Friday, we're going to have Mortal Engines, The Mule, and a movie you alluded to a little earlier, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And you said that's getting some pretty strong reviews so far.
Yeah, very strong reviews. Early pieces are kind of painting this as like one of the best superhero movies just, you know, of recent memory. Very, very strong word of mouth at this point.
Which is interesting for a full-blown cartoon movie. It's not even like a, you know, Pixar animated type flick.
No, it's not. Yeah, I mean, but it's got a very kind of interesting visual look. It's very sleek. It's you know, it looks like they're gonna do some different things narrative wise. And you know, when I saw the trailers, you know, I thought it was kind of cool, but I don't know, for whatever reason, I wasn't completely invested into it. But hearing all this positive buzz does have me, you know, maybe recalibrating, you know, my interest levels in the movie. So yeah, if that's coming out in a couple weeks, might just give it a watch. I'm getting pretty heavily into, you know, kind of the Oscar season and picking up and getting invested in that stuff. But, you know, this might be a nice little break from all the heaviness I'll probably be watching.
That's a good point. And it's got a, you know, some unique voice castings, Jake Johnson, Nicolas Cage, you know, so definitely putting a little firepower into the cast behind it.
Yeah. You got a very, very intriguing cast. Mahershala Ali, Liev Schreiber, Haley Steinfeld. It is a stat cast that lent in the voice of this thing. So,
I left off some of the biggest ones.
Yeah, this seems like it's going to be pretty awesome. I usually don't use that word a whole bunch, but more I read about it, it seems like it's something special.
All right. Well, we will know in a couple weeks here. Mentioned The Mule as well. It's going to be another Clint Eastwood directed movie that he's also starring in. It's also going to bring the likes of Andy Garcia, Lawrence Fishburne, and Bradley Cooper. I think Eastwood gets mixed up in some drug trafficking. Maybe he even gets caught. And then he's got Cooper and Fishburne tracking him down. I think Michael Pena might be in it as well. I don't know. To be honest, the trailers aren't really driving that much interest for me. And, you know, a rough year for him so far after the debacle that was the 15-17 to Paris. You know, one of the bigger duds of the year.
Oh, yeah.
But again, that, you know, that was kind of plagued by, you know, having the actual people that the event happened to star in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas he's actually, you know, he's bringing some big names. You know, Lawrence Fishburne, who also was in Mystic River that he directed. Obviously, Bradley Cooper's having a huge year. So, I don't know. I really hope it's good. I'll probably go see this one for thatmomentin.com.
Cool.
But the trailers just don't excite me that much.
I actually have not caught a trailer. All my exposure to this movie, I knew it was coming, but all my exposure to this movie has been like through TV spots. So I'm going to try to go in, keep that in, go in as blind as possible. You know, I know it's based on a true story. So hopefully I don't hear too much more than that. Maybe I'll be surprised, you know, with the cast you've got. Maybe I'd have to think it has some aspirations of, you know, being an award season player. But as you mentioned, there's not a whole bunch of buzz to this. Normally, you know, at this point in time, if you had aspirations of, you know, being an award season player, there usually would already be like a narrative by now. So I'm guessing maybe the chances of it doing that type of stuff it wants to do are probably pretty slim. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm interested to see what you say. I would probably go ahead and give this a watch too. I can't promise it, but I'd love to maybe bounce the ideas, our thoughts off of each other if we could.
Yeah. Hopefully we both get a chance to check it out and can delve into it together.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about like Mortal Engines? Because I guess it's a popular book franchise.
I don't.
Which I never read. So, okay.
I don't. I know it's got like a, I have to think it's got a huge budget. I'm trying to see if I can pull this up here. Huge, 100 million. I've seen bigger budgets, obviously, but you know, yeah, I don't know much about it outside of it being produced by Peter Jackson. But I know, yeah, little to nothing about the actual story. I've seen the trailer a couple times, but that's really about it.
Yeah, it looks like a post-apocalyptic type deal where people travel on, like, giant wheels on Earth, and they, like, battle each other.
So maybe, like, a Mad Max for, like, PG-13 type crowd?
Yeah, something of that sort. I don't know. It looks like really, really heavily CGI-driven. So, yeah. Not a ton of interest for me in this one. But I'm guessing fans of the book are probably a little more excited for it.
Yeah, you know, at this point now, when I kind of, you know, hear it's not exactly young adult adaptation, I don't think so. But, you know, when it kind of comes from that stuff or is reminiscent of that, I've kind of already tuned out sometimes when I hear that. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a whole bunch of interest in this either. I would like to get to it, but I'm not going to promise anything just because I know I'm going to probably have other stuff that will draw my attention or draw my need. So, I'm going to tentatively put this on the back burner.
Yeah. Like you said, the young adult, that immediately turns me off from movies. Look at like the Divergent series, Maze Runner. These are movies I had no interest in before they started, just because that's the feel that I have from them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and unfortunately, you know, it's just the reality of the matter is most of them haven't been good. You know, the Hunger Games, the first one was pretty solid, but you know, normally for every hit, there's like four whiffs on these. And I think you can kind of see with Hollywood, they haven't really been getting into that stuff a whole bunch anymore. They've kind of taken a step back and, you know, kind of reassess that whole market. Cause I don't think the returns on investment have been strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Then the following week, coming out on that Wednesday, December 19th, is going to be Mary Poppins Returns. I think you and I talked about this one last week a little bit, but, I mean, we're expecting pretty large December numbers on this one. I think that's if the week before doesn't kick off with Spider-Man, I think Mary Poppins will really get things going.
Yeah, huge. And again, I've only heard small things about this, but this actually has a really good shot, I think, of like being an Oscar contender. It'll probably be more that we discuss once we kind of maybe either break down predictions or just maybe when things actually get finalized as to what's going to be the Oscars. But it looks like it's going to be a pretty interesting year. They're saying like this could be a year we have like more popular movies in the Best Picture conversation. But this one, the few things I've heard have been painting this as like a really like touching, heartfelt type of movie. And I... Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I stay away from trailers a lot now. I really don't watch or go on my way to see trailers unless I'm actually at the movie and I'll just sit through them. But I haven't really seen a whole bunch with this, but everything I've heard is like this is going to be pretty big.
Yeah, it looks pretty similar to the original. And if they can recapture that magic, I mean, there's a reason it's such a classic movie. So if they can just replicate that formula, they're going to have a surefire hit on their hands.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And coming out 2 days later that week, actually a lot. So that's going to be December 1st, that Friday. Going to have Aquaman, Bumblebee, Holmes and Watson, and Welcome to Marwen all coming out that day. Where should we start?
That's a big one. I guess you got to go with Aquaman. You know, I've seen trailer upon trailer for this. I know you and I don't have a whole bunch of investment or interest in this movie. The initial things I've heard though is that it's not terrible. It maybe might be the second best movie in DC's lineup at this point after Wonder Woman. So it does seem like there's some positive buzz that is building for this after screenings and initial audience takeaway. So I guess you obviously consider that as a positive. I'm sure I'll probably will end up checking it out, but I'm still just, there's something about it that, you know, I'm not super into or care enough about, but you know, if it's doing good stuff, and it could potentially, I won't say rewrite the narrative of DC, but if it can kind of, spin it a little more positively, then, you know, kudos to them. And I like James Wan as the director. You know, he's obviously one of the better, guys out there. He might be like the best modern horror director there is today, but he proved his worth with the Furious 7, directing he did there. So, you know, he's definitely delving more into a big budget. So, yeah, I mean, kudos to him if he can, you know, put another positive notch in a sorely needed DC lineup.
Yeah, you know, I read one like explanation of it, I think, that said it's, you know, like Star Wars underwater.
Yeah.
But when I think to Star Wars underwater, I think of like all that ridiculous Jar Jar Binks stuff that happened.
Yeah.
Like that is Star Wars underwater, and it sucked. So I really hope this doesn't have that same feel to it. But yeah, I don't know. I'm hesitant on this one. I'm not getting very strong vibes that I'm going to like it. But I'll definitely be going to check it out and review it regardless.
Okay, cool.
And then we've also got the first Transformers spinoff with Bumblebee. And again, not what I'm excited about.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, you've got huge movies backloaded at the end of the month that normally maybe I'd be excited for, at least intrigued. With the trailer, you know, I think I'm a little more interested than some of the recent Transformer movies. I do like Haley, Steinfeld. I think she's pretty talented. She can do a lot. I loved her in The Edge of 17, and, you know, she's obviously pretty easy on the eyes. But, I think it might be better than maybe some of the Michael Bay most recent Transformer movies. But yeah, I struggle to really get myself amped or super excited for this, and I know John Cena's in it too. But yeah, just I'm not amped to necessarily check it out.
Yeah, I have such a bad taste in my mouth about Transformers. I watched the first and second ones. After the second one, I was like, all right, this is trending in the wrong direction. The most recent one, I was actually at the premiere in Chicago.
Oh.
At the Chicago Theater, or like the old opera house. You know, all the stars were there. Michael Bay was there. They're, you know, introducing the movie. I left after 20 minutes. It's like, this movie sucks.
I thought that was going someplace else, but that caught me off guard. I left after 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the one where they put in like King Arthur mythology in that whole story?
Yeah, I think so.
The Last Knight. I think that's what the last one was.
Yeah, I think you're right. Just weird.
Okay.
It just, yeah, I was just out on it from the get-go, obviously.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd say I actually think it might be better than some of the recent Transformers movies that have come out, but, you know, I'm already kind of so soured on these that even with me being mildly intrigued, I just can't get the investment level that's needed to really make me maybe go on my way to check it out.
I know. Yeah. We're in the same boat. I'm just going to keep my fingers crossed that I don't have to be the person that reviews it for that moment in.
Yeah. Man, I might be the brave soul. We'll see. I'm not going to commit, but we'll see.
Other one we've got coming out is Holmes and Watson, where we've got Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly doing their rendition or take on Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. Man, the trailers that I've watched for this, I guess the trailer that I watched, it just looks like they dumbed things down way too much for this one. I don't have a great feeling about it.
Another movie I haven't seen a trailer on, but, you know, I've seen some TV spots for it. Some people have kind of soured on Will Ferrell. I'll say this, Will Ferrell is one of the guys who I can look at and for every reason, he just makes me laugh. He's got this look about him that just, he can just look, stare blankly into a camera and I'll start laughing. So, I mean, I do think the guy is funny, but, you know, some of his last few movies, have been, you know, fairly disappointing. I actually liked the first Daddy's Home. I thought the second one was terrible. You know, there's some laughs a little bit with like the Get Hard movie, but ultimately it was kind of average. And I thought The House was kind of disappointing too. So I don't know. Like, you know, I don't know if he has already reached his peak with comedy. I'm sure he can still do some pretty good stuff. But with this one, I can't get excited. And you said it perfectly. It seems like they dumb it down a lot. You know, with this, and I'm not down with that.
Yeah, the only thing I was hoping for is, I wasn't sure what it was rated at first, is, like, if they're going to dumb it down this much, maybe they'll they'll rate it R and you'll get some extra raunchy laughs out of it, but it looks like it's rated PG-13, so I can't get on board with this one at all.
Now I'm with you. Directed by Ethan Coen, he wrote the Tropic Thunder movie, which, you know, I thought was pretty funny. I'm trying to think what else he directed. There's something semi notable that he did in the last couple of years, and it's kind of funny. I always think of, I hear Ethan Coen, I automatically think of the Coen brothers, but that's not him.
I had to double check and make sure it wasn't one of the Coen brothers at first.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I looked at his stuff the other day, and it actually made me hope, like, you know, the movie had a chance. But he did Get Hard, he wrote the screenplay for, and he wrote the screenplay for Men in Black 3 as well.
Yeah, that's what he did. All kind of middling movies, maybe the occasional good scene, funny moment, but consistency, I would say it's kind of lacking in both of those movies. So yeah, not high hopes for this one.
Yeah, not at all. And the last one coming out that week is actually one I'm excited for, in Welcome to Marwen, about Steve Carell. I think he's a war historian.
I'd say a war historian is apt for the movie.
War historian gets jumped at a bar. I think he loses virtually all of his memory, and a lot of it's about how he comes back from that and the unique coping method that he uses and the strong women that are there to support him. It's from
Robert Zemeckis.
Thank you. You're ready for that one.
I was.
Yeah. So, strong director. Zemeckis has, some awesome movies. We mentioned Forrest Gump, Back to the Future. So, strong potential for this one. I think the trailers look pretty solid so far. And, could even be a potential acting nomination for Steve Carell.
Yeah. I'm thinking maybe this is the, I talked a little bit about Beautiful Boy last week. I was a little disappointed with that. With this one, it seems like, he's fully immersed into this role that he is. I haven't seen any trailers. Again, I like to kind of go in a lot more blind than maybe other people. Mm-hmm. But the pieces I've seen on television, TV spots, have me very intrigued. And, Robert Zemeckis is a pretty, visual director. He's kind of innovative in some of the things he does. So, yeah, count me intrigued. Since The Office, Steve Carell, he's shown, he can remove a lot of traces, almost all traces of Michael Scott. Beautiful Boy, he had some traces in that, which I felt like it was a good performance, but it wasn't one of his better ones of late. So it sounds like this one, though, is something that's going to, have a lot of sticking power in the Academy Awards and Golden Globe race.
Well, if that doesn't get him his acting nomination, he'll be back at it again the following week, coming out on Tuesday, which is going to be Christmas Day, the 25th. Is going to be Adam McKay's directed Vice, which is the true story behind Dick Cheney. So it's got a monster cast. Christian Bale's Dick Cheney. Amy Adams is Lynn Cheney. Steve Carell is Donald Rumsfeld. Tyler Perry is Colin Powell, and Sam, what's his last name?
Not Rockwell, is it?
Yeah, Sam Rockwell, thank you.
Okay.
Is playing George Bush. So, if you remember a few years back, Adam McKay directed The Big Short,
which
was
one of my favorite movies of that year.
Oh, it's an awesome movie. Yeah, it's got a phenomenal cast, bunch of big names, and it gives his very unique spin on the housing market when it crashed in 2008. Here he's back at it again, putting his unique spin on the true story of Dick Cheney and how he was actually one of the most powerful men, I guess on the planet when he was the vice president. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Christian Bale looks fully immersed in the role. Looks like he packed on a bunch of weight for it. And I think it should be a pretty solid movie and probably an awards contender for sure for acting, I would think.
I think you're right. And even, recent with just the news about, rest in peace, George H.W., passing away. I mean, I know it's kind of tangentially involved with the movie, but it's not, it's not huge. But you know, don't overlook that aspect of it. You know, George W. Bush is his son, but you know, there might be some additional buzz around this type of movie. So, yeah, I haven't seen any trailers for it, but I think Christian Bale is one of the you know, better actors of this generation. I do love Steve Carell. Amy Adams brings, you know, tons of intrigue to any movie she does. And Sam Rockwell, you know, kind of fresh off of his Academy Award win. So, yeah, huge class.
Yeah.
Huge cast, even some of the smaller additions. Tyler Perry, under the right movies, he's shown he can do drama. I think about his roles in Gone Girl. Like, he's surprisingly, you know, very, very competent and, you know, gets away from that other stuff that he does. So I think he'll be great here as Colin Powell. Jesse Plemons, too, a smaller name, but he brings a lot in his movies, whether it's, God, he was in, what's the movie? Black Mass.
Oh, yeah, he was really funny in that. Yeah, I think that's really all we had. Awesome. And based on there being virtually no new releases, I don't think I'll be seeing any. I probably won't be seeing anything this week. If I get lucky, I'll try to check out either like Fox Lux or Mary Queen of Scots, but I'm not going to get my hopes up. Otherwise, thanks for tuning in to this week of Cinema Recap.